The reason for the title in this series is that time and time again, it's been through my personal experience and through observation and listening and talking to others, that if we are to follow the words of the Our Father, "Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven," it doesn't seem that one can indeed do the will of God in isolation, by oneself. It almost always involves being with others. It almost always involves giving and taking in an interpersonal exchange context, whether it's on the job, at home, in school, or wherever you may be, even on something as wonderful as this is coming to Holden, which is really sort of a microcosmic view of what things could be. You just can't do it by yourself. So if that's the case, what is implied here is that one really needs to work at communication. It almost always points to good communication. And by good, I don't want to use, that's kind of a value judgment word, that, you know, if it's good, that means there must also be bad communication. Maybe a more appropriate way to say that is that we have to be effective communicators. We have to really be effective in order to do what we're called to do. Now, there is a, that's terrific. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. There is a tendency sometimes, I think, to get the phrase efficient communicator mixed up with effective communicator. So the question is, if there is a mix-up, that means they're different. And the following question is, what is the difference between effectiveness and efficiency? Well, without throwing that out as a question and starting discussion on that, it is probably good to remember that efficiency really means doing things right. If you are efficient, you do things right. However, if you are effective, it means that you do the right thing. And there is really a difference. Any comment about that? Is that a play on words, or is that real?
That's real, very real.
Yeah, okay.
We've got a lot of efficient rules, but not effective.
That's right. A lot of rules to be efficient, but not effective. And so with that said, kind of dip into the gospel accounts as recorded to us by the four gospel writers, or by the four traditions that that put together this good news for us. If we read Matthew, we hear about the Beatitudes in the fifth chapter, and that obviously has to do with my interaction with others and with community. Talks about my way of being, my attitude, my way of being. Blessed are the poor in spirit. I mentioned yesterday, that's what Matthew recorded. Luke doesn't even say in spirit. Matthew tries very hard to cover all the bases, and he's talking primarily to a population that's pretty much influenced by Pharisaic law and Mosaic law. So in order to get everybody in, blessed are the poor in spirit. And Luke says, blessed are the poor. So it's a big difference. Luke is a Gentile talking to a lot of folks who are discouraged by the time. So he gives them his account of what Jesus said. But nevertheless, in reading the Beatitudes, what is implied here is that we really have to be a certain way, and then we have to interact with people. We read towards the end of the gospel according to Matthew, all those things that we have to do. You know, Jesus talks about when I was in jail and when I was sick, when I didn't have any clothes, and all those different things, when I was hungry. So those things are not things that people do alone. There is obviously some sort of message there about interacting with others. Luke is the same way, about what one must do. The stories, the parables in the Lukean accounts are always dealing with interaction of people. Same for Mark, And of course, the same for John. John talks about being people of light, children of the light. So, if that's the case, it seems to me that the place to start to do anything that is effective is to start with how we communicate. And communication is just not so much how we talk to one another, but also how we listen. How we listen. And what goes on in our head when we see things and when we hear things. And so with that in mind, I would like very much just to take one small segment out of a very, very large title, almost impossible to cover even for one whole semester. I'd like to take one tiny segment out and make a point with that small segment. And I start this way. How often have you seen or heard something and you have arrived at a conclusion and didn't have any information on it, and on the basis of that, made decision and gone on with your life to do something? How often have we done that? And I don't expect somebody to say, seven! I don't mean that. But I really throw it out as a rhetorical question, one for reflection. I ask myself, how often have I looked at someone, or saw someone, or heard something, or had somebody tell me something, and on the basis of what goes on in my head, create a world and a story, and then acted on that without any more information, and without ever really hearing what was said? It seems to me that it becomes very difficult, it is difficult, and is continuing to be difficult for me to follow his will if I've already got my plan laid out. Since the general title of the series is Personal Strategic Planning in the context of the gospel, I don't know how I could plan very well if I don't sit and listen and figure out what's going on around me. Now that's all a preamble for what I'm about to do. Would you like to be involved in a communication exercise that would perhaps help you understand how you listen and how you figure things out? Would you? So let's see if we have enough people to go around. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. That's enough. That'll work. Don't forget the sugar.
Can we get some pencils?
Oh, pencils. Oh, okay. He's a nice guy. He really is.
Details.
Yeah, he's an S. For those of you who don't know what we're talking about, we just had a little session next door. He really isn't.
He is not an S.
He's just a loving guy. He really is. She knows because that's his spouse. What I'm going to do is I'm going to pass around a handout to you. And there are four stories on this handout. And what I would ask you to do is don't read ahead, simply because it'll only confuse you. I'm going to give you the handout, and there are tests, four little tests on this handout. What you're going to have to do is you're going to have to listen to me. I'm going to tell you a story. And after I tell you the story, then you'll take the tests. Unlike other kinds of instruments, this really is a test. You can fail this. And the one with the lowest score gets a chance to stand up and confess their sin.
No, just kidding.
All right. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to ask for some help. The delivery truck was traveling at a reasonable speed. That was true, right?
No question mark.
You're right, it's a question mark. Okay. The only damage resulting from the incident was to the truck's fender.
Oh, so at least hit the tree.
The only damage resulting from the incident was to the truck's fender. Well, that's a question mark. We don't know. We know that there was a tree there, maybe, but grass, other parts of the truck may have been damaged. Not necessarily, we don't know. We don't know. Question mark. You saw the truck swerve and climb over the curbing.
True.
Anybody have anything different? Question mark, maybe? It's true, because that's what the story says. Number five, your neighbor across the street was backing her car out of the garage.
No.
False.
Next door neighbor.
But we don't know if that was the only person backing their car out. So it's a question mark. Question mark. We don't know. Number six, the truck suffered no damage.
False.
It's false because the story says the contrary. And number seven, you saw the truck approaching as you stepped onto your front porch from your living room.
True.
That's true. Number eight, the man who drove the delivery truck swerved and ran his truck up over the curbing. Nah, this is Holden Village. It's a question mark because we don't know who's driving. That's right. Could have been a trained chimpanzee. You know, they're really smart. Number nine, the delivery truck swerved in order to miss a child playing in the street. And that, too, is a question mark. Okay. Cool. Didn't do too bad. The real question is, though, how often do you think it's happened to you that someone has observed you, heard something said about you, or heard you say something, drew an inference, come to a conclusion, and acted, and you knew nothing about it? Worse yet, how often have I done that? And yet I claim to be trying to do the will of God. I get nervous sometimes. I have people say to me, well, I'm doing God's work. That's great. But I get real nervous when somebody says I'm working for God. I get real nervous. Mm-hmm. There's a difference, you know. Working for God and doing His work is two different things. Okay, moving right along. Can I read the next story to you? Think about it. Okay. A man, his wife, and his sons, ages 11 and 14, drove across the country on a vacation trip in their three-year-old automobile. They started the trip on a Friday, the 13th day of the month. The wife says she did not like the idea of leaving on that day, and the man laughed at her statement. In the course of the trip, the following mishaps occurred. The automobile radiator sprung a leak. The 11-year-old boy became carsick for the first time in his life. And the man lost his fishing rod. Statements about story B. There were fewer than two in the family. True or false?
False.
That's right. It's false. Story says there were two children also. Number two. The sedan's radiator sprung a leak. Well, didn't it say the car or something?
Yeah. Didn't say what kind of car.
Very good. This group's getting smart. Question mark. Car could have been a sedan, could have been a station wagon or some other type. Just didn't say. Number three, a fishing reel was lost.
Wrong question.
Okay. Just want to see if you're there. All right. Number three, the wife really didn't mind leaving on Friday the 13th. Question mark. How come? I mean, what is this, a trick or what, right? Story states only that she did not like the idea, but did not say anything about her mind leaving on the 13th. Didn't say that. Just said she didn't like the idea. I'm waiting. Okay. That's yeah, that's really kind of, that's
a fine
yeah,
line.
Yeah, that's really a fine line. What's so significant about her leaving on that day anyhow? I mean, what's the big deal, right?
Well, I find the trouble separating the fact that she didn't like the idea and that she really didn't mind.
The story reads, the wife says she didn't like the idea of leaving on that day, and the man laughed at her statement. And the question is, the wife really didn't mind leaving on Friday the 13th.
The story didn't say it was Friday, did it?
Yeah,
that was
earlier.
But read what I'm saying. Let me see, this is interesting. Let me go back to the story. They started the trip on a Friday, the 13th day of the month. Okay? The wife says she did not like the idea of leaving on that day. And the man laughed at her statement.
It doesn't say why she didn't like the idea.
It didn't say that. And the question is, the wife really didn't mind leaving on Friday the 13th.
We don't know.
We really don't know. What do you think triggered that kind of response in our head? And what does Friday the 13th do in our society? What's that all about? So the superstition is not in the story. It's in where it's. It's in our heads. Hasn't got a thing to do with what we talked about. It just happened to be Friday the 13th day of the month. It gets better. Let me move on. A fishing reel was lost. We don't know, really. We don't know. We know that a rod was, but unless the rod was connected to the reel, we don't really know. We really don't know. Okay, number five. The family's trip began on Friday the 13th. That's true. It left on Friday the 13th day of the month. Mm-hmm. It's true. Number six, the 11-year-old lost his fishing rod.
We don't know.
It's a question mark. We don't know if the 11-year-old lost his fishing rod. Story doesn't preclude that, but we really don't know. The last sentence, or the last part of the sentence in the story, there's, and the man lost his fishing rod. We don't know if the boy lost his or not. Okay. Number seven, the story mentions the name of the family taking the trip.
False.
No, it doesn't make any mention. You're right, that's false. Number eight, the make of the automobile in which the family made the trip was not mentioned in the story.
True.
That is true. And number nine, the man laughed at his wife's fears of Friday the 13th. That's a question mark. We don't know what the man was laughing at. Story says that he laughed at her statement that she did not want to leave on that day, but doesn't preclude the possibility that she had some other reason other than the fear of Friday the 13th. Maybe she had a party plan. Maybe she said, my gosh, this is going to be a long weekend because we don't have to go to work on Monday, and I hate the traffic on I-5. Oh, we shouldn't leave today. We don't know. May I go on to the next story? I really want this to be light and for us to, you know, maybe it's a little disconcerting to come up with some good. But the point is, think for a moment how hard it is when we want to do the will of God. We think we're doing His will, but have we processed all the data to make the point? Moving right along. John and Betty Smith are awakened in the middle of the night by a noise coming from the direction of their living room. Smith investigates and finds that the door opening into the garden, which he thought he had locked before going to the bed, is standing wide open. Books and papers are scattered all over the floor around the desk in one corner of the room. Okay, that's a pretty easy one, right? Can we go on?
Yeah, let's read story D.
Okay, story D. No, we better. Okay, can I proceed now? Is that right? Okay, the statements about. Mrs. Smith was awakened in the middle of the night. True or false?
connections either.
We don't know what this means.
Okay. So your answer then is false or question mark? How many had question mark? How many had something different? Okay, the people who had something different, we know about the others, don't we? But those of us who had something different, can you want to share what made us do that? I mean, it's obviously Mrs. Smith, isn't it? Well, I won't drag it out. The correct answer is a question mark. And the reason, and you know, this is a funny little easy little parlor game thing, but the reason for the question mark may not be the same reason you put the question mark. Most of you did state the right reason. Betty is not necessarily John's wife or even a missus. Now what's going on in your heads? Moving right along, let's go to question number 8, or statement number 8. Statement number 8. Mrs. Smith was sleeping when she and Mr. Smith were awakened. True, false, or question mark? The story doesn't say that Betty Smith was a missus. That's the reason for the question mark. If you have anything else, that's something else you're putting into the story, not me. And number 11, Mr. and Mrs. Smith were awakened in the middle of the night by a noise. Well, obviously, it's got to be a question mark now because the story doesn't say that Betty Smith was a missus. Well, then what's going on here? I mean, this is Holden Village. I mean, we're pretty neat folks, but we're not that neat, are we? What is happening here? Well, like Paul Harvey, there's the rest of the story after this. And let's go on to statement number 2. Smith locked the door from his living room to his garden before going to bed. True or false? We don't know. As a matter of fact, to make this story longer, to make it shorter, item number 4 and item number 6 are false. Number 4, Smith found that the door opening into the garden was shut. That's false, because when he went out there, he saw it was open. And item number 6, John Smith was not awakened by a noise, and the story said indeed he was. That's what got him to get up. He heard a noise. He and Betty Smith both heard the noise. All the other responses to this little story are question marks. If you have something to the contrary, I would be more than willing to just simply clarify that, because sometimes just to go along, well, I don't anybody know I had false down here. I don't anybody know it. That's not the object. You might really want to know why it is a question mark. For number 3, the story doesn't say. It could be that John or Betty left and scattered before retiring, so we don't know indeed what was going on. The books and papers were scattered between the time Smith went to bed and the time he was awakened. We don't really know that. And so that's a question mark. They could have been, or maybe they weren't. We just don't have enough information. If we say anything else, it's because we really are drawing some inferences about the story. Okay? 5, Mr. Smith did not lock the garden door. We don't know because the story didn't say that he did. He may have, he may not have. But we just really don't know. Number 6 is a false. Number 7 is a question mark. Number 7, nothing was missing from the room. Well, we really don't know. We really don't know. We just know that the door was open and papers were scattered all over the place. Number 9, the noise did not come from their garden. That's a question mark. The garden could be in the same direction as the living room, but it's not necessarily true. We don't know. And then number 10, Smith saw no burglar in the living room. We don't even know. Maybe he did see a burglar, maybe he didn't. Maybe there wasn't even a robbery. We just don't know. Well, how do you account for John and Betty Smith being in the same house and maybe down the same end of the house? Well, because Betty's there taking care of her father.
Maybe Mrs. Smith is his mother.
Could be his mother. Could be that the son is taking care of the mother. We don't know. Yes. Shall we move along? Any other thoughts you may have had, never mind. Okay, now moving right along. This is the last one. A businessman. This is making you paranoid. I mean, really. What's he going to say next? You know that next door neighbor of mine? I'm not too sure anymore. Maybe I shouldn't say that. A businessman had just turned off the lights in the store when a man appeared and demanded money. The owner opened a cash register. The contents of the cash register were scooped up and the man sped away. A member of the police force was notified promptly. All set, right? That was pretty easy, wasn't it?
No.
Okay. How many need this a little bit more time? Okay, I'll wait. I really don't want to rush or push. Okay, can we go now? All set? Everybody all right? Okay. Statements about story D. Statements about story D. A man appeared after the owner had turned off his store lights.
I thought it was a businessman.
Well, it's a question mark. And the reason it's a question mark is that we don't know that the businessman and the owner are one and the same. We really don't know. We assume, but once again, the assumption is born out of an inference that we make on the story. And it has been duly noted that to assume often will make an ass out of you and me.
That's an inference.
Well, in a sense it is.
In a real sense it is. But on the other hand, we do know that it can happen that way.
So, anyway, moving right along, the next statement about this story. The robber was a man. Well, it is a question mark, you know. It really is. Was there necessarily a robbery involved here? Perhaps the man was the rent collector or the owner's son. They sometimes demand money, you know. They really do. Even daughters demand money, but this was a guy. So we really don't know. Oh, come on. You're just doing this. This is some trick stuff. Oh, well. Moving right along. Number three. Statement about story D. Three. The man did not demand money. Now, that's false. That's designed to keep your morale up. I mean, if anybody had question mark, you're with it. Of course, the man certainly did. That's an easy one to keep up your morale. Number four, the man who opened the cash register was indeed the owner.
True.
Number five is question mark. It may seem, and number four, was the owner a man? That's really dirty pool. I mean, come on. Women don't own stores. Women don't know nothing about it. Come on. What do we know about, you know, women? They're weak. They're very emotional. They don't know anything. What do you know about running a store? I mean, come on. There's got to be a man, right? Okay. I love the rainbow. Great stuff. Anyway, moving right along here. Someone opened a cash register. That's true. But let's go back to five. The store owner scooped up the contents of the cash register and ran away. Well, this is a question mark too. It may seem highly unlikely, but the story really doesn't definitely preclude this from happening. It just said the money was scooped up. So we don't know. We really don't. There's a lot we don't know about this story. And what we think we do anyway. And then number seven. After the man who demanded the money scooped up the contents of the cash register, he then ran away. It's a question mark. Of course, we don't know who scooped up the contents of the cash register or that the man necessarily ran away. We really don't know. Now, number 8, while the cash register contained money, the story does not state how much money. Well, it's true if the story had said that the cash register had money in it, but the story didn't say that. So it's really a question mark. The dependent clause is doubtful. The cash register may or may not have contained money. And
but it said it scooped up the money.
No, it says scooped up the contents. In your head it said money, not the story. Don't feel bad. I do this all the time. Okay, the robber demanded money of the owner. By now, it's got to be a what?
Question mark.
You're right, because we don't even know if there's a robbery. We really don't.
We don't know who's the owner.
Yeah.
We don't know anything.
We really don't. We really don't know anything about, I mean, what you hear, we don't really know. Number 10. The story concerns a series of events in which only 3 persons are referred to: the owner of the store, a man who demanded money, and a member of the police force.
Questions?
Well, if that's in your head, what would be your answer? Well, is it? Maybe the owner and the businessman is one and the same. So the answer to statement number 10 is question mark. Only 3 persons if you count the businessman and the owner as one. But can you really? Do you really know that? Number 11. The following events were included in the story. Someone demanded money. A cash register was opened. Its contents were scooped up. And a man dashed out of the store.
Question
mark. Dashed out of the store? Could he not have sped away on roller skates or in a car? And do we even know that he actually left the store? He could have sped downstairs. We don't know. We don't know if it was a man, and we know it's a man, but we don't know if he dashed out the door or not, or dashed out the store or not. Now I'll read it again to you, and then I'll give you the rest of the story. A businessman had just turned off the lights in the store when a man appeared and demanded money. The owner opened a cash register. The content of the cash register were scooped up, and the man sped away. A member of the police force was notified promptly. Now the rest of the story is this. The businessman was Martha's husband. Martha was the owner of the store. They happened to be in a state that was not a community property state, and so the husband didn't have any legal right to that store. The man who came in and demanded money was their son. He just got an okay from the school that he applied for in California that yes, he was accepted, and he was due, and he came in and he demanded, "Mom, Dad, I gotta have my money. I just got the thing and I'm leaving tonight." So she opened the cash register A, because they have 2, and gave him his wad of traveler's checks, which he asked him to keep for him. He took that and sped away in his 1989 Chevy. And Martha went to the telephone and called Al, her brother, who was the police sergeant on duty at the police station, and said, "Al, guess what? Your nephew just got his assignment at the school. Would you get a blue and white to pick up the car for us? Because he's going to leave it at the airport." "Sure. See you later. Bye."
You think that's funny?
I know. Tell you another story. This is a true story. This isn't just a makeup. There was a story. It was really, really sad. In this particular parish, every morning at around 7:30, the husband of this particular family left, pulled his car out of the garage, and went off to work. About 20 minutes after he left, every other morning, this strange blue car pulled up behind the house in the alleyway, and the man got out the door and went into the back door. And the man's wife could be seen sometimes standing in her house coat, opening the door and waving in the gun. The guy come in. Gets juicy, doesn't it? One day, the car pulled up, and the wife was seen opening the back door, and she just had on a house coat, and she ran outside and saw him, and just before the door closed, she gave him a hug. And then all the shades were pulled down in the back of the house. And people really got concerned. And after a while, somebody got enough guts to tell this guy what was happening. And the guy looked at the people who had, this by this time, formed a committee, mind you. We can't have this kind of scandalous behavior. And you need to know, and we're so sorry. If there's anything we can do to help, we will. But something's got to be done. And I for one, didn't want to tell you, but I was asked to talk to you. And you and I have known each other for a long time. The guy says, oh, you people are something. The man that came, indeed, every other day, happens to be my wife's brother. He just got out of prison, and he's trying to make his way back in. And he would come every day, and he would do some cleaning for her, because you know she has that heart murmur. And the day that you saw her hugging him was the day he said, I got a job, and next month I'll be leaving you guys.
Why were the shades pulled? The
shades were pulled because he was getting ready to do some work in the kitchen. Use it as a dark room, and they pulled the shades, and he had a little field bag, and he wanted to make sure no light was coming. And that day, he just happened to do that. Very coincidental to the incident. How often do we sometimes, we hear things about other, you know, for instance, other, you know, those Lutherans. Do you know what they do? No, but, oh man, I heard it was awful. What kind of church service do they have? You hear about those Roman Catholics, they still keep M16s in the cellar waiting for the day when they put on their Roman insignias. And guess what? Guess who moved across the street from Martha? Well, you know, one of the boat people, they got a break and HUD gave them a house. That means we're going to have flowers and vegetables and we're going to have to keep our cats and dogs inside because, you know, they do have cats. Isn't it awful? Ain't it awful doing the will of God when we think we're doing the will of God and we're not? Well, needless to say, I'm at a point where I might want to just simply read this last item. That this guy named Matthew, he worked for the civil service. He was a tax guy, and he quit his job. Too bad. But he decided he quit his job and followed this young itinerant preacher who was always getting in trouble. And so when it was all over with, he decided to write what happened. And one of the things that this itinerant preacher out of Nazareth said, and Matthew makes a note to record, is found in the 7th chapter of his writings. And so Jesus says, judge not that you not be judged, for with the judgment you pronounce, you will be judged. And the measure you give will be the measure you get. Why do you see the speck that is in your brother's eye and do not notice the log that is in your own eye? I usually go about looking in my eye every morning because no matter how much I believe that and no matter how much I try to do differently, I find that from day to day, I have to really work at not drawing inferences on something that I don't know absolutely anything about. Totally ignorant of what's going on. But yet I've already got this figured out. And it isn't always towards a particular person or group. Sometimes it works against you personally. I did something just as recently as a month ago. And for a person who teaches and does all this stuff, you think I'd know better. But sometimes I don't listen to my own lectures. I had a note on my desk that the assistant superintendent for personnel in the school district, which I'm a school administrator, wanted to see me and it was urgent, and that he was very, very upset. So now what? So I had to wait until 2 o'clock that afternoon to see him. But between the time I got the message after I got out of conference that morning at 2 o'clock, this guy had all figured out. You know, he always was a sorehead. I don't know what was wrong with him. And I knew that he was fussing last year about something. What's it gonna be this year? I really wish he'd just, you know, back off and give me some breathing room. I got a graduation coming up pretty soon. I've got to get reports out to the state. And why on today? And today I got another staff meeting. It's just a pain in the neck. I question him because I don't think he's a good person at Lawson. How did he get to be assistant superintendent anyway? I remember when he was just a principal. What a jerk. Well, I went over there, pretty miffed and kind of annoyed, but I better play it cool because after all, he is the assistant superintendent, you know. And I walked to his office, I said, Willie, do you want to see me? He said, yeah, sit down, Braswell. I got to talk to you. I'm really feeling upset. I'm really, really, it's urgent. And he began to tell me, my brother has a kid who just doesn't seem to make it to school. And they're sending him out here to stay with us for the summer. And in my family, it's really a disgrace. Here I am, an assistant superintendent. My brother is the superintendent of a school district back east. And he went on, and he was genuinely upset. He wanted to know, he didn't want to make an imposition, but he wanted to know, would I be kind enough to talk to this kid, his nephew, when he got there, and is it possible I could enroll him, because enrollment was closed, enroll him in the summer session and kind of work with him. Of course, I said yes. And I left the office really thinking, you know, I don't care who you are, you do that. You make inferences about things you know nothing about. You really do. And suddenly, Willie was a nice guy. I was so glad to help him, and I felt really proud that he picked me to do this. He could have asked some other administrator to do it. And I had forgotten so quick how he was a rotten rat. Just 5 minutes ago. This actually happened. This happened. So I like to think of my work in a school district as an opportunity to witness to the Lord, and so I really do count it as part of my ministry. But I wasn't doing much ministering in that one day. I was really upset with that guy. So really, in putting this together, I thought about that once. I kind of squeezed that in between the strategic planning stuff. If I'm to plan strategically, I need to stay open and consistently check out my database, because sometimes all the wonderful plans that one can make is flawed by an inference that we've made somewhere along the line and has become part of the brick and mortar of our goal. Well, any questions, any thoughts?
Don't we really need danger if we never act until we have all the facts of never doing anything?
Oh, yes. Making inferences is not bad at all. Sometimes you have to make an inference, and that's part, really, making an inference is a very healthy thing. It is part and parcel sometime of the whole business of discerning. Discernment always precedes decision making, particularly here in a very real critical time or it's a major decision. So inference is very, very important. Inference is related to critical thinking. It's related to the kind of thinking that is necessary to get through. Where the inference becomes a little dangerous is when we start making inferences and decisions about other people. For me to make an inference about myself or make an inference about the information around me so that I could perhaps draw some kind of idea about what to do is one thing. But to press that on, the incident that took place last month with Willie Stewart, I could have, you know, if I really wanted to do that, and I really felt that was my time was taken up and I felt imposed upon, I could have called and asked, you know, Willie, I really have a conference this afternoon, and I understand that you have some concerns. Is there any way we can do this tomorrow, or could I come over sooner, or could you give me a call when you get back in the office? Because I'm concerned about your urgency. I could have said that, mm-hmm. But I didn't. I sat there and stewed on that thing. So, in that sense, the inference was not very, very appropriate. Matter of fact, it was outright wrong. But we do have to make inferences. We do, and I think it's important to just know when to maintain an optimum balance between the kind of thinking and the kind of discernment process that we go through, and then ultimately hope for the best when we make decisions, whether they're just everyday mundane decisions or very, very critical, long-range decisions that impact on where we're going to go. Yes.
Are you saying then that lacking sufficient data about somebody, it would be better to give them the benefit of the doubt?
Yes, indeed. I often think about that at the early television series. I used to laugh at that, but I guess there was really a message. Just the fact, man. Just the facts. Especially if you're in a position of selecting people. If we don't have data, it is perhaps better to not do something for lack of information, but to add information where we don't have is where the danger comes in. Yes?
Are there types in the Myers-Briggs that might be more prone to not getting the facts?
Not really. And she's talking about a particular personal preference inventory we took. People who are able to figure out what their types are need to simply grow on their strengths and then try to get information to avoid inappropriate inferences. Intuitives should intuit where they might get more information that would support what they want to do, and people who need the facts need to go about collecting data to do that. Well, I'm done, and I'm not going to hold you any longer. It's been great being with you, and I hope this somehow helps us to understand doing the will of the Lord.